Welcome to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beal. This week, we look back at the Coquettes with one of their founders.
Scrumbly Coldwin, composer, music director.
We'll dig into the legacy of the Coquettes and talk to the assistant director of Coquettes, Eternal Emissions, Bertie Bob Watt.
And I think there's always interest in parody and ridiculous theater and pushing things too far, but we're living in very cautious times. So Eternal Emissions is hopefully bringing back that font of ridiculousness.
This week, the history, legacy, and future of the Coquettes on Out in the Bay. The Coquettes were this flamboyant ensemble of hippies. I mean, I'm talking about women and gay men decked out in gender-bending drag during the 1970s. One of their creators is my guest, Scrumbly Coldwin. Scrumbly started performing, composing, and directing for the Coquettes at the very beginning, and since then has continued to make a living as a performer, composer, writer, and director. I met up with Scrumbly and Bertie Bob Watt, who you'll meet a little later, at Scrumbly's home in Oakland. And the first question on my mind was, why Scrumbly?
I'm a Scrumbly, which means a lot of things. In British English, Scrumbly means the edges are blurred. I was given that nickname back in 1969, and I think it describes what I do. I do a lot of things. A lot of them overlap. A lot of them blend together. And it involves music and theater and cabaret and art, graphics. I'm a people person. I'm a peace bringer. I'm a spiritual advisor. And I need a lot of spiritual advice myself.
You mentioned you got the nickname Scrumbly in 1969, which was fair to say a transformative year in your life, not just because of this great new nickname, but because of the beginnings of the Coquettes. I wonder if you can take me back to just the very, very beginning and what was going on in your life and how did you find this group?
Well, I suppose starting with the Summer of Love, which was 1967, not 1969, as some people would have it. The official Summer of Love was 1967. I found myself not feeling it necessary to hide in any way as a gay man or as an individual. I kind of dropped out. I stopped working so I could devote full time to getting stoned, and which I did for a little while, but still found it necessary to pay the rent. But I moved into a big commune where I was introduced as Scrumbly, and a lot of people that I met then later became at least peripherally part of the Coquettes.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. My guest is Scrumbly Coldwin, and here he is performing the song Midnight in Manhattan on KPFA in 1978.
Shaken for us, hear the neon sing. It brings a picture of romance for us. While the chorus girls sing, we'll have a penthouse rendezvous. You know I can't forget. Midnight in Manhattan, moonlight in your arms. Riding all around the gay white city. Times Square plays its naughty games for two. You think I'm rich, I think you're pretty. The cabbie recommends a nest of love for two. Now the cocktail shaker's empty. Wow, on the terrace blaze a million stars or two. You know I can't forget. Midnight in Manhattan, moonlight in your arms. once we had that certain little feeling, like Central Park was only built for us. Now another game, and I found that gems can buy you happiness. And some nights I wear a midnight frown. I drink to drown that certain feeling. You know I can't forget midnight in Manhattan.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. My guest is Scrumbly Coldwin, one of the founding members of the Cockettes. I chatted with him at his home in Oakland over the weekend, and he picks up the Cockette story right at the very beginning, in 1969.
I was living in Bushmaker at the time. That was the first Cockettes commune. And I found myself sort of becoming part of this kind of glamour hippie thing. If there could be such a thing, but it was the glamour because of the rock and roll and the people we knew. I mean, Iggy Pop once was, I discovered him in my bed when I came back from Yosemite. He wasn't waiting for me. He was with a young woman. But he looked very open and inviting when he looked right at me. You know, he was definitely a polyamorous person. We got to see Iggy at full mast. I got to see Iggy. At full mast, it was quite a sight. One of our other activities, regular activities, was to go to the midnight movies called the Nocturnal Dream Shows at the Palace Theater. And they'd have all kinds of amazing films there. I mean, that's where John Waters first appeared.
I was going to say it was subversive stuff that wasn't playing at other theaters, right?
It was. It was underground subversive stuff. There was Kenneth Anger movies, Scorpio Rising. And there was also Busby Berkeley, which I'd never really been exposed to that much, but to have this wonderful selection of movies curated.
The people who ran these shows asked Hibiscus, who was this fabulous bearded drag queen, to bring some friends and perform one night at the theater right after the movie.
And so Hibiscus did, and we danced a kick line to the Rolling Stones' Honky Tonk Woman. And they wanted more. They wouldn't let us go. And from that point on, all the midnight audiences would say, bring on the dancing boys.
And you were one of the dancing boys?
And I was one of the dancing boys. And we had dancing girls, too. And it was whoever was around us would come with us and dress up in their finest, freakiest stuff. Artistic drag was really the key. We were definitely not your standard mainline old school drag queen. We weren't trying to convince anyone that we were one gender or another. We were just celebrating all of our sexuality. So to be both at once, to be in drag as Marilyn Monroe with a beard, to be in fabulous drag and reveal yourself with a glittered cock, at one point, or fully rhinestoned, meticulously glued to your penis, you know, in beautiful patterns, you know, as if it were a rhinestone, a tattoo made of rhinestones. It's art drag is what it is what it was. We were making statements. So the statement was, we are neither exclusively male nor exclusively female. We are none of the above. We are all of the above. We celebrate every combination of freakiness that you can imagine. We love shocking people. We love turning the old concepts on their ear. And of course, being young, that's natural anyway. You always want to radicalize and change the world.
This all began around the Summer of Love, and just based on the stories you've shared with me already, I can't help but ask, how much of a part did drugs play in the Cockettes? Like, how important was it?
It depends on who you were. If you were into your drugs, you were into your drugs. If they helped express if they helped you to come out, so to speak, not just gay, but as to come out as who you really are. Yes, then they were a part of that, a big part. LSD was a big part for me. But that was back in 66 when I had those big revelations, 65, 66. You have the revelation that, oh, so things aren't, there is no in crowd. It's just sort of a decision that some group gets together and decides. There is no hip. There is no, normal. All those things I discovered with LSD, the only reality is our connection. That we're all part of the same thing. And we all wanted to fuck everything and everybody in the whole world at the same time. I think about midway into 1970, our first year at the Palace, when the crowds were around the block, people trying to get in, people sneaking in. There might have been as many as 1,800 people in a 1,200-seat capacity theater. It was like the Children of Paradise with people hanging off the rafters. And you know, people were fucking in the aisles. And they were... On Halloween of 1970, our first year, what premiered there was Night of the Living Dead. That was the premiere of that movie. And there was a whole huge audience, 1,200 plus sitting in the aisles, people stoned to the tits on LSD watching Night of the Living Dead, and people freaked out. We had three Brides of Frankenstein that night prepared to go on. One of them, Goldie Glitters, had an epileptic fit because she had taken MDA and had to be carried out on a stretcher. So the audience not only saw Night of the Living Dead, stoned to the tits on acid, they saw the Bride of Frankenstein being carried out. You had this amazing sense of, oh, we're glamorous. But it was more like rock star, and we kind of knew it's not real, but let's go along and play along with it. We would, for that show in the middle of that summer, 1970, we did a show called Hollywood Babylon after the Kenneth Anger book. And around the back of the Palace's Union Street that's going up Russian Hill, and we'd get a taxi on Union Street and have them drive around the block and leave us off at the front of the Palace with the red carpet. And then we'd go around and pick up more cockettes and then bring them. We just got into that thing. Oh, yes, we're so glamorous. Our pianist at that time, Peter Minton, lived in Menlo Park in a house that was totally 1930s. We were a craze of Art Deco. That was so stylish. We went to this whole Art Deco craze, probably... starting with the Busby Berkeley movies, which were terribly psychedelic. There was Peter, who had, I think it was a 1937 Lincoln or something like that. When Sylvester came, as he started getting more money, he bought a vintage car as well. Everybody was into their vintage. Everybody was into their deco drag or versions of it or aberrations of it.
You mentioned something there casually, which I think is really cool. You mentioned Sylvester, and Sylvester is sort of this, especially here in San Francisco, sort of this cultural icon and this link to a time period long lost, gone too soon. But Sylvester, a lot of folks don't know this, was in fact a cockette. Is that true?
He came to one of our rehearsals. I think it was for a show we were doing called Radio Rodeo or something like that, sort of cowboys on the radio. And he sat down at the piano and accompanied himself, and he sang M-I-C in his Sylvester thing. K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E, you know, except much more fancy than that. And we went, oh my God, you want to be with us? Sure, get on board.
So what was Sylvester like as a cockney?
Well, he was a diva. I mean... You know, it's like when somebody comes out of the dance floor and starts cutting a rug, you give them room. So, yeah, go, Sylvester. Let's go. I'm glad you're with us.
Well, for though you think I'm your angel from above, I'm just a jaded lady and you're a fool in love.
That was Sylvester singing Jaded Lady. You're listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beale. Sylvester wasn't the only star with roots in the Cockettes. Do you remember Divine from all those John Waters movies? Well, she performed with the Cockettes back in 1972.
Divine was flown out by our producer, Sebastian. It was flown out and at a program of Divine Films, John Waters' Divine Films, before the movie started, he did an act. He came out on stage with a shopping cart with fresh fish in it and flung them around, rubbed them between his legs and things like that, and threw them out of the audience. And we screamed, the Cockettes screamed the loudest. We lost our voices that night. And it was so outrageous, so wonderful. And then we got him a couple months after that to be in a show with us called Journey to the Center of Uranus, and he played the crab on Uranus.
By 1971, Hibiscus, who was one of the founding Cockettes, had left the group. The remaining Cockettes tried to capitalize on their newfound success and a little bit of press attention they were getting, and they tried to do a run in New York City.
Bombing that first night, like Hiroshima.
It didn't go so great.
But the subsequent performances got great reviews from the Village Voice. But at any rate, it sort of took a little of the air out. We knew we weren't going to go big after that. We were just going to stay local, San Francisco. So we did a bunch more shows in San Francisco, but by the middle of 72, it sort of seemed like it was played out. We did Les Étoiles de Minuit on New Year's when we got back from New York. We did Hot Greeks and Journey to the Center of Uranus. And we revived Shanghai and Tinsel Tarts, which were our big, most popular shows. And it seemed like, well, this is fine. We've had a good run. And back then, things changed so fast that, you know, we felt like we'd packed 40 years into 2.5. So we just kind of called it. John Rothermill, who was one of the great, great singers, performers at the time, so much charisma on stage, he was leaving. He was dropping out. So that was, for me, kind of, okay, that's enough. We're sort of bleeding too much. Now let's quit while we're ahead. So we had the big misdemeanor beauty pageant, and Divine played last year's misdemeanor. And it was a fabulous thing.
I want to talk a little bit about the show at Oasis with Birdie here in just a second. But just overall, when you look back on the Cockettes part of your life, like, what do you think the legacy of the Cockettes is? Like what's the message you hope that they left in the world?
Be fabulous. Be, you know, own it. Show all the sides of yourself. Who knows? I mean, who knows what people are going to think? Find your audience, find your light. But start with showing who you are. And please don't go by, don't let other people judge you. Invent your own, be your own counterculture. Make up your own rules.
I recorded this week's episode at Scrumbly Coldwyn's home in Oakland, and during the session, I was treated to a song I wanted to share with you. And afterward, I'm going to chat with someone who you might call a modern-day Cockette. He's a performer and the assistant director of the new show, Cockettes Eternal Emissions. And this is one of the songs that you'll hear performed during that show. This is Scrumbly Coldwyn and Birdie Bob Watt singing Tinsel Tarts. Honestly, that was my favorite part of my entire visit. That's Scrumbly Coldwyn and Birdie Bob Watt singing Tinsel Tarts. You're listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beale. Out in the Bay is a nonprofit independent production, and we rely on listener support to stay on the air. Like, we don't get any money from the podcast platforms, NPR, or the stations that air Out in the Bay every week. So if you wouldn't mind making a tax-deductible donation to keep the show going, we'd really appreciate it. You can do that and hear past episodes, get in touch, all the stuff at outinthebay.org. Thanks in advance. Scrumbly Coldwyn, who you met earlier, is a founding member of the Cockettes. This is Birdie Bob Watt.
I'm a new vaudevillian, and then I consider I do a little, you know, a little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants.
Birdie Bob is sort of a modern Cockette and has been a performer for as long as he can remember. He's had a few odd jobs, too, like being a hostess in drag at Hamburger Mary's in San Francisco.
At the old original one on Folsom Street, and the old one's gone. A lot of the places I've worked at are defunct now, which is interesting. Through time, I ended up doing theater in San Francisco in the 90s.
And eventually, he would connect with Scrumbly, and they would begin working together.
For quite some years of doing Cockettes Revival after Cockettes Revival.
Birdie Bob is performing in and assistant directing the new show, Cockettes Eternal Emissions, at Oasis the first weekend of June.
The Cockettes Eternal Emissions is a show of Scrumbly's work, rooted in the Cockettes, and certainly of the Cockettes' feeling. And I think there's always interest in parody and ridiculous theater and pushing things too far, but we're living in very cautious times. So Eternal Admissions is hopefully bringing back that that sort of that font of ridiculousness. And Scrumbly's works, which during the revival, they were, reimagined, and some things were written for specific performers.
I wanted to write something that was great for everybody that's involved in this show. It's my music, and I wanted people to take that song and run with it, rather than try to recreate or imitate any particular Cockette.
The Cockettes' Eternal Emissions opens Thursday, June 2nd at San Francisco's Oasis. Tickets and info at sfoasis.com. The show features live performers, an original soundtrack, and Bertie Bob says it'll leave you guessing for sure.
There are going to be those times where everyone's going to be in your face and maybe in your lap. They might be a big pink elephant, although we don't have them planned, but something. There's going to be a lot of stuff in the house that it's not just going to be like watching a movie that, you know, you're going to eat popcorn during and stare slack-jawed at. It should be quite an immersive experience.
I asked Scrumbly why you should go see the Cockettes' Eternal Emissions, and he says you only need one reason.
Because we told them to.
If you want to learn more about the Cockettes, you should check out the San Francisco Public Library. Up there on the third floor, there's this exhibit that runs through August 11th. It's called The Cockettes: Acid Drag and Sexual Anarchy. If you liked this show, I think you'd dig it. I'll put a link with more info in the web post for this episode at outinthebay.org. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beal. And it occurs to me that Pride season is rapidly approaching, and we here at Out in the Bay want to hear your favorite Pride memory or your specific Pride plans for this year. Send us your story, outinthebay@yahoo.com. That's outinthebay@yahoo.com. And you get bonus points if you email us a voice note with your answer. We might even use it on the air during Pride Month. Thanks in advance. That's outinthebay@yahoo.com. You can catch up on past episodes, get in touch, sign up for our email newsletter, and make a donation at outinthebay.org. Your donation helps us keep bringing queer air to your ears. This show, Out in the Bay, is a nonprofit independent production, which means we get no financial support from radio stations, NPR, podcast platforms, none of it. We rely on listener support from people like you and people like Brad Payton and Richard Merck of Silicon Valley, very generous in their support. Cornelia Enders of San Francisco, thank you for your support. And thanks also to KALW 91.7 FM in the San Francisco Bay Area, as well as San Francisco Public Press and its radio station KSFP 102.5 FM for broadcasting Out in the Bay every week. Don't forget to send us your story of your favorite Pride memory and your plans for Pride 2022. We might put you on Out in the Bay in June. Our email address is outinthebay@yahoo.com. That's outinthebay@yahoo.com. Our executive producer is Eric Jansen. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. I produced this episode and engineered it. Thanks for checking it out. See you next week, Out in the Bay. Thank you.